I mean, you're the soccer man.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all soccer people.
This is Roots Pod.
Picks is one for the Roots. Here's Prentice.
Good ball.
Leads it across. Toward goal and in! Welcome to Oakland, Tucker Lepley, the loanee from the Galaxy with the worldie to put the Roots on top.
Oakland Roots 2, El Paso Locomotive 1. This is Roots Pod. This is Aaron. I'm here, of course, with John and Peter. And we get to talk about a win. How great is that? All right. So just to set the stage, of course, Oakland looked terrible for the first 6 minutes. Were the benefit of a really questionable offsides call. I had to go back and watch this one. I don't know if this stands, if there's a video assistant. Gonna be honest, that would have been a first or second minute goal. And El Paso made it count a minute later. They got a legitimate one. And then they got, in the sixth minute, another really good chance, but were only able to shoot it straight at Spiegel in goal. Things kind of settled down a little bit, and Oakland would actually be victimized by their own terrible offsides decision against them when Peter Wilson got loose in the El Paso half and very well may have been off or onside. Rather, he was called off. I got to be honest, by the naked eye, looked off, but there's a reason we pay the refs. And I feel like that one also, whew, man, that was close. But turning point, obviously, a big turning point in the 18th minute when Arturo Ortiz was in the vicinity when Wolfgang Prentice, while on a break, fell over. I think there's a decent chance he did actually clip the back.
Nailed on red card.
Yeah, I mean, it's the old David Luiz red card right there. In fact, I think he got one for almost exactly the same thing in somewhat controversial circumstances a few years ago. Yeah, it's a dog show. You know, there's no degrees of physicality or whatever with that call. So he's out of the game, and that completely changes the complexion. Of course, now Oakland on the power play for the rest of the match. And man, did they look for a long time like they weren't going to do anything with it. But near the end of the first half, deep into first half stoppage time, Peter Wilson, with a pretty remarkable piece of individual skill, sort of volleyed it up to himself and then kind of did a quasi bicycle thing and hit it sideways into the net. And then the Roots came out in the second half and still looked like they weren't going to do anything. I mean, that was an incredibly frustrating watch for a while, but then there he was, Tucker freaking Lepley, brand new Oakland Root, to cut inside on his left foot from the right and just bang one home from the edge of the box. And that would be all she wrote, 2-1 to the Oakland Roots. And a very satisfying result. It may or may not say a lot about the squad going forward. I feel like there's a few things to talk about here. One, very obviously, Tucker Lepley. We're probably going to have to talk about him a little bit. The first few minutes of the game, probably should discuss that, since if there's any part of the game which is going to be meaningful going forward, it was that first 15 minutes where the Roots kind of looked lost on defense. And then we can talk about the fact that, actually, we'll just start with this. We'll talk about the fact the Oakland Roots, the internet shows them in third place now. We have to level with you. We have spent some time parsing the very convoluted tiebreakers in USL. If you're a fan of literally any other league on the face of the planet, you'd look at the standings. You'd say the Oakland Roots have a goal differential of +4, level on points with Orange County SC, who has a goal differential of +3. Obviously, the Roots are ahead of them. Google says no. The USL Championship website says no. we have no idea why. In a show of how serious this league is, let me just run down some of the tiebreakers here. First is total wins against conference opponents in league matches. As far as we can tell, Oakland,
way too many words.
Yeah, John is way upset too many with the number of words in these tiebreakers. So far as we can tell, Oakland and Orange County are level there on four apiece. Number two is goal differential against conference opponents in league matches. And this is where our elementary school and math teachers are losing faith in us, because we've counted several times and we're pretty sure that Oakland's goal differential against conference opponents in league matches is superior to Orange County's goal differential against conference opponents in league matches. But here we are. The internet is telling us otherwise. And of course, if you read it on the internet, it's always right. So unfortunately, the Roots sit in third place technically, but I have to point out the Roots have the best points per game rate at the moment in the Western Conference. That is, if every team in the Western Conference were to continue earning points at the rate they are currently earning points, at the end of the season, the Oakland Roots would be on top by about a point over San Antonio. Now, that said, they would be 15 behind Tampa Bay, who would be in the top of the East. So, I mean, small victories, but
we don't have to play them till the final.
Don't, and you just, you know, in a one-off, we got this. Absolutely. We already went there. It was a draw. So things are looking good. We mentioned at the end of the last podcast, right, that at the moment it looks like there's a bunch of teams at the bottom of the USL. And then there's Tampa Bay at the top. And then there's everyone else. And I described it as sort of the upper middle class, because it's sort of weird to say that, you know, there's a huge gap between a lot of these teams and what's going on at the bottom. The Brooklyns, the Sporting Jackses, the Monterey Bays of the USL. And, you know, however you get those 3 points, the Roots are going to need to start getting 3 points to sort of separate themselves from that pack. So this was a great start. Let's start with the good. Tucker Lepley. John, we haven't had a chance to speak on this podcast specifically about this fellow. You did a little write up on the blog, and so why don't we start with you? What do we know? Do we have any idea what we expect to see of this guy, and how great was that performance? What a debut performance, huh?
Yeah, let's start with that performance. That was just a hell of a shot from right side pushing into the left. From what he said and from what I heard about him, that is something that they were doing in practice throughout the week. Tucker said it in the press conference itself, that, or even Ryan Martin said it in the press conference himself, that it was something that he was executing over and over again in training, and look, it came to fruition in the game. So you know, from what we know about him and from everything that was said about him from Ryan Martin, is he is a versatile player. He's going to fit in on that right side, cutting into the left. He could even fill in at fullback in a pinch. From like Martin said, he could play the 10, he could play the 8. So we're really going to see him probably in a lot of ways. We might see him in the midfield spot, you know, coming in. We could see him come in for Faisal Battash or Florian Vallot, you know. So we'll see how quickly he can get a starting spot. But I mean, shoot, what a start for him. I mean, that was something that, I mean, it looked like, you know, Faisal wanted to do throughout the game and just couldn't execute. And this guy comes in, does it in his first attempt. I mean, if he could execute that with ease, like how can you keep him off the field? And that's something that I've said for quite a lot of people so far, just in recent weeks, you know, just last podcast,
I was talking about Faisal. Worldly with regularity, how can you keep him off the field? I don't think this guy is necessarily available on loan from the LA Galaxy if he's doing this every match.
Yeah, you know.
Because he scores that goal in MLS, too. Like, that goes in MLS.
Yeah, like, and that is a that's an interesting subject too, you know, because he kind of bounced on and off LA Galaxy's roster last year, more specifically than in 2024. He got most of his time in MLS Next Pro, got a lot of time in MLS Next Pro. And if you just, you know, talk to LA Galaxy fans, you search him up online, LA Galaxy fans wanted him, you know, featured in this lineup. They really believe in him. He's only 23, 24 years old, so still very much developing as a professional. They, you know, the Galaxy fans really, really believe in him, and it feels like this is an opportunity he's been aching for. Talking to him in the press conference, he alluded to the last couple months being a really, really difficult time for him. So he's coming to Oakland with a very big chip on his shoulder. He is coming to Oakland with something to prove, not just to the fans, but to himself. And I love that, right? How could you not love that? He is coming in and he wants to execute. He wants to perform. He wants to score goals. And that's something that he said to Ryan Martin, not just about himself, but about the team around him, is that from everything he's learned about this roster and everything we know about this roster, the depth that it has, this team is going to score goals. That is the strong point of this roster. I mean, you see it in my write-up week in, week out. I'm talking about the attacking depth, and there's so much available. You know, if Jacquesson's not on, in comes Lepley. If Faisal isn't on, in comes someone else. You know, Trejo. The list goes on. Really, the only undroppable player, it seems like, is Peter Wilson. He's the only out and out striker on this roster. Maybe we could say that about Wolfgang too, but Wolfgang is such a versatile player, just like Lepley. And with the injury situation, what it was more so a couple weeks back, you know, Wolfgang can really drop deeper into the fullback roles, and Wolfgang's really executed at such a high level on that left wing role. He's kind of that other undroppable player, but Peter Wilson really is that true guy. It's just, it really speaks to the attacking quality in this team, and then you add Lepley to the mix. It's just, I mean, it makes me excited. I really think that the fans should really be excited about the possible, not just the quality that we have right now, but the upturn that could happen when we get to closer to mid-season, you know, three quarters of the way through the season. Like, hopefully by the end of the season, the attack is really churning on all cylinders and we're really hitting those highs. So, I mean, it's fun. Let's hope it continues.
I like that flexibility in attack. You know, I think we talked about in the last podcast that, like, Martin can run out a lineup, and if it doesn't look like it's matching up well against the opposing defense, he has a lot of levers that he can pull to change things up. And I think, to his credit, he does. And, you know, guys want to start, but if Martin sees something isn't working and he subs a guy on in the 60th minute, that guy is not going to be as upset about not starting. I think you keep everyone happier if you keep rotating these guys through and giving them all chances and these different setups and see what works. And, you know, I mean, I think that it kind of looks like maybe Lepley should start. If he could play, you know, 40 minutes and pull a goal out, then, like, maybe, you know, let it rip. Let's see if he can start. And that means dropping somebody else, but it's a problem that Martin's going to be happy to have. I think you are right. I mean, Wilson, calling Wilson undroppable, he played every minute. I don't remember when he came off against El Paso, if he did, but he scored that goal at the death in Loudoun, and it seems like if the Roots need a goal, Wilson doesn't come off right now. Even if Jackson Keel ends up on the field in place of someone else. If we can pivot back to the beginning of the game, I mean, I shared in our chat this account, what are they called? G Plus Game Flow does this thing that's sort of, it's max possession value difference chart over the course of the game. And I mean, as you might expect, those first 5 minutes were rough, as we all saw, where, you know, El Paso hit the back of the net twice and had another great opportunity. And it was basically luck that it wasn't 3-0, but they only scored one of them. And then there's a period, you know, I mean, the Roots don't take over until the red card, but it's basically even. So, you know, El Paso came flying out of the blocks, hit the Roots, and then I think they had largely retreated, you know, said we got our road goal against a great attacking team. Let's play very tight and not and hold it. And I, you know, that may well have bitten them. They probably could have kept the pressure on and done something. Although, you know, I don't want to take too much agency away from the Roots for, you know, getting their shit together. But, you know, the Roots had made the game even at the point that the red card came. And so I think in that sense that we don't, the red card is decisive in the game, obviously. But I don't think, you know, it's not like the Roots were getting blown out the whole 18 minutes until it.
Yeah, and I do think they deserve credit for pushing the action to lead to towards the red card. You know, they're doing a lot of long balls over the top, and you know, they catch Wolfie really breaking in behind, catching the defense out, and you know, it leads to a foul. Martin alluded to kind of like Hackshaw's red card against Orange County. Kind of a similar situation where they play the ball over the top, catch the defense out, and it forces a tackle through the back. So, yeah, those first couple minutes were pretty rough. There's been many times where I call out the USL for not having VAR yet. Roots are definitely one of those teams that can effectively implement VAR. There are a lot of cameras all over the field. Fucking college soccer implements VAR. The USL can too. But
yeah, I don't know if it actually would have, like, those were so tight, those offsides.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, I thought chance the they were goal, right. I thought the first goal was, I mean, the first goal wiped was, yeah. I think that was a goal. Peter Wilson's ball over the top. I mean, it was really close. I thought, you know, from the naked eye, it looked like Peter Wilson was before the midfield line. You know, he would have been behind.
Oh, he's definitely not. He only had a foot on the defensive half of the midfield. This definitely was about, there was a guy there.
Yeah. So, yeah. But it's tough.
And this did lead to a sort of a funny exchange on the broadcast where Ricky Lopez Espin was like,
"Oh, what'd he say?
If you start your run in the defensive half, then you can't be offside." And Joe was like, "No, I think no. It's about where you are when the ball is played, which is correct. Like, the parts of you that can score have to be in the defensive half when the ball is played for that to." That rule to kick in, but it was still so close.
Yeah.
And look, you know, I don't know. You watch these CONCACAF games sometimes in the way they do. It was a CONCACAF game, right? A few years ago that sort of went viral because they drew the offside line like with MS Paint, and it was obviously diagonal.
I don't remember that.
I think it was between two Central American countries, but I'm going to see if I can find this.
That first goal sort of offside. Sorry, the first goal that was chalked off, offsides or not, El Paso's offense outplayed the Roots defense on that. It's like, I'm glad it doesn't go up on the score sheet because, like, they earned the goal. It would have scored whether he was 6 inches offside or not. You know, and so the Roots got extremely lucky there. I gave a lot of stick to Neville Hackshaw a couple weeks back. I will say he has had a couple decent games in a row. He sent the pass to Wolfgang that leads to the red card. And, you know, those are the passes he's on the field for because other center backs in this league don't don't hit your left winger in stride 60 yards down the field. You know, like very few guys in this league can do that, period, much less the center backs. So, you know, those are the skills that are keeping him on the field, that and his aerial defense. And so, you know, to his credit, he nailed that. And I don't feel like I've seen some dispute about how culpable he was on the first goal. It's, you know, not 100%. I think he was out of position. But overall, most of the game, his defense was okay. A lot of his defense was fine and loud. And so maybe he's figured something out. He's got something going a little better. But, you know, I do want to say I stand by my criticism, but he is playing better over the last couple of weeks.
To go back to those, to the period of time when Oakland was up a man, we did hear from Ryan Martin after, oh God, I forget which match, but he did, I believe he was quoted as saying basically that we've got two guys on this roster who can just beat their guy, Jackson and Trejo. And, first of all, I must say Trejo was utilized in a much more, wide role in this match and was much more effective. Now, it's going to be difficult to draw too many conclusions because the Roots were up a man for 70 minutes, but he did look much more effective in the wide areas than he had previously in a more central role. But it is probably something to watch that the Roots rely on a lot of structure, a lot of quick passing, a lot of quick moves to generate chances. With the exception of Peter Wilson, who's getting into good areas. And, you know, there are ways of dealing with that if you're the opposition. And it really looked that like El Paso had figured it out for most of the match. And maybe it says something about how the Roots are thinking about this, right? That we sort of alluded to this in our last episode, right? That it's kind of odd to bring a midfielder in at this stage. It's a little odd, right? Like you're like the best part of the team right now appears to be the central midfield, Bobosi and Tommy McCabe. And we're lacking bodies at the back. And you bring in a central midfielder, and I suppose it's worth bringing up that one of the sort of rumors is that there's frustration with the progression of the ball from back to front. And maybe that's what this is the role that we see this guy occupying, trying to help sort of unstick something in that offense.
Well, okay. So one thing to respond to that, I think that after a great start to the season, I think that Bobosi has played less well the last three games. And I think he was our worst player this most recent game. And I think he was brought off because he couldn't do anything. And I don't know, you know, it's early in the season for that to be fatigue. And I wonder if he needs to sort of connect into what the other part of what you were saying. I mean, possibly the part of what opposing teams have done is they've figured out his game. And he needs to figure out what he has to do to sort of raise the level again, mm-hmm. to so that he can do that. Because I mean, I think a lot of what he failed to do last year was exactly that. He failed the team as a whole, of which he was a central part, failed to stitch defense to attack. And that's like, you know, I mean, McCabe is a good passer, but that is secondary on the list of McCabe's responsibilities. You know, McCabe maintains possession, but he is broadly speaking not the one trying to initiate attacks. And so I, you know, possibly that's it, that we need to have an alternative if and when Bobosi is not able to sort of make that jump, is not able to be that the sort of ignition there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I'm not sure how much I have left to add there. I mean, he's
you don't need to add anything, you know, like we're just observing things. They got the win, we're very happy. It's just like you know, what keeps this train moving forward, and why might it derail, and how can we prevent that? You know, those are the questions that the guys on the touchline are thinking about, and it's the questions we get to speculate on as fans.
Right. I mean, it is interesting. You know, Bobosi hasn't had the greatest performances the last few weeks. I think one of the hallmark qualities about him is he loves to pull up from distance for a shot. And, you know, I'm struggling really to remember any times he's even tried to pull that off this season. I don't know if it's been a direction against that or he just hasn't found the opportunity. But, you know, it is worth mentioning that Lepley was commented that he could play that eight role, which would kind of fill in to Bobosi's spot. So something to keep an eye on. We'll see. I mean, Bobosi started every single game. Could his position be up for grabs for someone like Lepley, or will we see Lepley continue filling in to that right side when we know he has, when we learn that he has a left foot like that? I mean, I think I'll take some shooting magic over some passing magic. I mean, but hey, it's both nice qualities to have. I mean, I want to see that curling shot again. That was Jeremy Doku esque.
Oh, fuck you!
What?
Man.
No. on the list of people you could have compared someone who cuts in from the left. From the opposite side, but a
curling shot from a top of the box. He literally did that like three times in a week. Like, come on. I'm sorry it hurts your feelings, Peter. This isn't about you, okay?
Isn't it?
He did it in other games other than against Arsenal, okay? This is something Jeremy Doku executes, all right? It's not about you.
I'm making it about me, though. It's just not what, like, yeah, he did it three times in 10 days or whatever, but I don't feel like it's what defines his game.
No, that would be dribbling into people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To return to Lepley, I mean, I gotta say, everybody in the front office, please mute right now. I moved around a fair amount during this game as I was there by myself and also didn't have the horn. And I was in a really good location for Lepley's goal. And he like came over to the supporters and he pointed to the badge, which is absurd for a guy in his first game on loan. But it's still, you see a guy do it. It's like, all right, man.
Yeah. Yeah. You're one of us now.
Yeah.
Maybe it says a lot about, you know, his situation, you know, just a team. He's eager to have a team take a chance on him. So, you know, keep it up, man.
I assume no one here watches the LA Galaxy on the regular, right? But given the esteem in which the LA Galaxy fan base holds him, like, why was he available? And I feel like the answer might just be that he happens to be behind their two most productive midfielders. Maybe this is the chance he needs, because it's not like, you know, Marco Reus is 36, 37.
Right, that spot is open very soon.
There's going to be a spot in the LA Galaxy midfield soon. And if he wants to spend the rest of the season proving that he belongs there, that's totally fine with me.
Well, it's funny. I mean, would you say that Carlson is the all-time most beloved Roots player among fans?
Okay, don't you think it's either Paul Blanchett or Emre Clemente?
Yeah, I mean, those guys certainly had longevity. But okay, so assuming that we're going to say that this is a real conversation, then we would say that, like, one of the three is a guy who was here on loan. So, like, it's obviously a route to, you know, eternity among the two dozen of us who follow the Roots.
Yeah. I mean, shoot. Fernando Mendoza is going to be an Indiana Hoosier legend for the rest of his life. He played 16 games there.
I mean, he's a Cal legend, and he didn't even win the trophy here.
Yeah. All right. So, good vibes. Maybe not so many answers to long-term questions, but we're feeling pretty good about things. The Roots are practically in the catbird seat at this point. This next weekend is not a league match. We have a home USL, a Prince Tires USL Cup home fixture against Sacramento Republic FC, the hated Sacramento Republic. Let's assume for the moment that the Roots are taking this cup seriously. This is pretty much a make or break matchup. You basically got to win your group to move on to the knockout round. And there are really just two credible options for teams who will top this group, and they are Oakland and Sacramento. Sacramento had the good sense to win their opening match 4-0 over Spokane Velocity, while the Oakland Roots sort of pissed away a couple of points against Monterey Bay, losing as a penalty shot. Sorry, I've already wiped it from my mind. If they were to beat Sacramento, I think they'd be back in the driver's seat, all things considered. So that's pretty much the goal here, assuming you want to go far in this cup. And it's a home game. That's great. One wrinkle, I guess. I mean, Sacramento hasn't played in like two, or will not have played in like 2 weeks by the time this game arrives, which is pretty unusual. And I hope they haven't used the time to get better or like practice or anything, because that would be annoying. But Sacramento, they do not appear to be the high-flying Sacramento of years past. They're still very good. They don't have as many many holdovers this year as they have in years past, but I don't think you can ever look at a Sacramento Republic roster and not come away with the impression that it's incredibly talented for this level. So even though at the moment they do sit behind the Roots, they have 13 points to the Roots 16, but they do have a game in hand on the Roots. So functionally, right, basically level with the Roots. And we've seen how good Oakland has been this season. So I just sort of assume that Sacramento's on a similar level. And it'll be interesting, I think, to see how Oakland treats this match. Mm-hmm. They did treat the Monterey Bay match pretty seriously, even if the result didn't reflect it, at least in terms of lineup and player selection. But I think you got to assume that they'll take the same approach here.
Yeah, maybe. What is your guys' opinion on this? What's your guys' opinion on this? Go for it or fucking start the kids?
I know. For me, winning a cup is the kind of thing you can do after we've established multi-year success in the league. And I would like to win the league personally. So I'd focus on that. But
do we have a midweek game next week?
No.
Okay. So in light of that, I would be willing to run out Wilson. Because I think that there are sort of, there's like three different questions. Do you start Peter Wilson? Do you start the normal, you know, who you think of as the starting midfielders? And do you start the starting defense? And we are throwing the game if we don't throw the starting defense, because our depth at those four positions totals one player, right? We have like one backup outside back, and that's it. But those guys also probably need less, well, at least the center backs need less rest than other positions. The midfielders, we could do a wholesale change at every position except Tommy McCabe and still be putting out senior players, you know? And so I think you do that. You try out some of these other guys who like haven't been starting but are starter quality. Florian Vallot should start. I play Lepley, you know, you got him. He's fresh. Run him out there. Who else? Batashe? Did he start last week? I guess he did. Anyway, my point with the midfield broadly is I think you can rotate a bunch of these guys without getting into the kids. Wilson, it's really, I mean, I know Jackson Keel isn't a kid. He's not like a 5-1-0 player, but we played Keel Keel started against Monterey Bay, as I recall. And I think that that's a big choice, right? I mean, I think Wilson is probably our most irreplaceable player at the moment if he gets hurt. Him or Michael Edwards. But I don't know. You know, these guys are professionals. It's all, they're only on one game a week for a stretch right now. Probably you can run Wilson out there. I am inclined to play starters everywhere that you don't have a specific injury concern. But if we're down two goals at half, fucking yank everyone for the kids. You know, like everyone that you're at all worried about their mileage is getting yanked at halftime if we're down by two. I don't necessarily think we are. I mean, I think we match up decently against Sacramento right now. I was just looking at their schedule. They only have the one loss, but like a draw against Vegas and an away draw against Brooklyn recently. And those are bad results. You know, like we beat Vegas soundly and Brooklyn are worse than Tampa, who we have an away draw against, and comparable to Loudoun, who we have an away draw against. So a lot of, you know, Sacramento's dropped points recently are very comparable games to the Roots' questionable results. You know, everything you would say that's questions the Roots' form recently also applies to Sac. They don't have an out-and-out goal scorer. I mean, their top goal scorer is on three. They spread them around, but, you know, like, they... Their fans are probably very jealous of Peter Wilson right now, which is not a situation we have frequently been in with respect to Sacramento fans, is feeling like they're jealous of our starters. All of that being said, I run out starters, maybe rotate Wilson. God, if you could find a way to rest Michael Edwards, I might, because like I said, I mean, there is, until Garcia is back, Edwards is just irreplaceable for this team. But everywhere else, I feel like we have at least something approaching depth, or guys who are sort of recently back from injury. And, you know, like Tingey doesn't have too many miles on him this season. So that's where I am for this game. Cause a win and we are right back in the running for this cup. A draw, and we're probably, well, a draw also probably in it. You know, shootout win or shootout loss.
No, it'd have to be a shootout win, I think.
You think even if we're taking, yeah, because then we're not taking points off Sacramento.
Shootout loss, yeah. We're
yeah, we need to
behind Sac after two matches.
It's not just that we need the points; it's that we need Sacramento to not get them. So yeah, if you know, a win or a shootout win, and I think we're okay. Anything else, you know, the cup's over. And I think that we should at that point prioritize rest. I certainly don't think if we're down by a bunch that we should throw on all of our forwards and try to salvage it. That
Yeah.
Especially when we have guys like Keel. We have that other guy, Roberson. Who we want, you know, if we're throwing on forwards to try to win it, make it the guys who are trying to prove something, not Wilson. Please don't run Wilson into the ground trying to salvage a late winner or something. It just doesn't seem worth it to me.
Yeah, I think you make some solid points, you know, and there being no midweek game is makes it more interesting. It's, you know, you want to have your guys in to build that consistency, that fluidity, just towards building towards the next game, you know, having 14 days off, I mean, might have some impact on how the system operates. So yeah, I agree with you, Peter. I think, yeah, maybe mix in a bulk of the usual starters, maybe guys that haven't got a lot of minutes, like Keegan Tingey, maybe Tyler Gibson. I'm curious to see where Julian Bravo is. Maybe if he's ready to go, this would be a match to do it. But I think I'm with you there. Like, don't play Michael Edwards. Let him sit. let those consistency things, you know, save it for another day. The injury issues are in the back line. Let everybody else do their thing. Lepley, a good time to get him more than, you know, 30, 40 minutes, maybe get him 60. So yeah, well, I maybe we'll see how the first half goes, and then Martin will make a decision, be like, oh, are we going for it? Do we keep these guys in? Yeah, I mean, I think the injury issues has tampered down a little bit. But now that I said that, may have cursed us because I've done it before.
I'm not sure if they could be much more cursed than they already are. I think your previous curse is probably still in effect. It's sort of blue on black if you've done it again. But yeah, I mean, with the exceptions, I think, of Edwards and McCabe, who have played every league minute, and I believe also played against Monterey Bay, although my memory, again, is fuzzy. It's not a fitness concern, because I feel like these guys are fully capable of running for 90 minutes. It's more like the longer you're out there, the more chance there is of an injury of some kind. They're professionals, so I'm sure they don't want to think about it like that, but I feel like that's the balancing act you got to have. All right. The Oakland Roots are obviously beating Sacramento Republic in the Prince Tires USL Cup this weekend. John, how will they be doing that exactly?
Oof. Well, I guess it depends on the lineup. Knowing it's a cup match, I'm probably not going to go as high-end goals as I usually go. So I think a 2-1 win sounds about right.
I see. That's interesting, because I would think, honestly, pressure's kind of off. Like, this is when you would expect to see the goals.
5-1 win.
Oh, okay.
A way to have the courage of your convictions there, Sam. John. Peter. I'm going 1-1 shootout win for the Roots.
Oh, see, I was thinking like a 3-3 shootout win myself.
I understand
the goals are going to come from like random places too. Like, it's going to be a Jockeson, Keel, and I don't know. What's the most obscure player that we might see on the pitch? Probably there isn't one, so it's going to have to be someone normal. It'll be like a Florian Velo then.
I mean, I don't think he's obscure, but I would be surprised if Dave Vincente doesn't get 2 or 3 goals this season. The way he like breaks down, the way he gets loose on the wing every time, what he has done is put in a good pass. But I wouldn't be surprised if teams start covering the pass more and he ends up in sort of like 1-2 situations or just going alone and trying to put a ball in. So I think Dave Vincente is one of those guys who I have my eye on to be like a defender who puts a goal in.
I think if there's anybody in this match I'm rooting for to get minutes and score a goal, it's Ali Al-Masnawi. Come on, Ali.
I want Jackson Keel to get on the score sheet. I guess he did. He did in the Monterey Bay game, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
But that's, I think that a thing... I think it's bad luck and then sort of the yips. But like, EJ Johnson was our backup striker last year and got a lot of minutes and never scored. And at a certain point, it's like hard to even want to put in your backup striker if you're afraid that your backup striker is in his own head. And again, Keel has scored, and so that's less of a concern. But I do feel like you want to feed your backup striker goals because you want them to coming in visualizing the ball hitting the back of the net. Because not just your backup striker. Also, you're like, when you are chasing a game, you have to win or you have to equalize. Like, you're going to have two strikers on the field and one of them's Keel. And right now, he's on one goal and it's not in the league. So, like, maybe it's a good chance to get him out and running and feeling like he's having a good season,
Yeah. All right. From your all's lips to God's ears, or Ryan Martin's ears, I guess, as the case may be. So I guess important note for this one, it's a 5 p.m. kickoff. So prepare accordingly. It's a slightly earlier game than normal, which might be nice. It's also Hometown Heroes Night, which I'm told is small businesses, which I'm going to be honest. I don't know if I equate small businesses with Hometown Heroes.
It's weird branding
for
that.
What I am looking forward to, I'm looking to see the halftime musical guest tie in here. We're going to get like a guy in pleated khakis rapping to the 12 people in the front row who haven't gone to get a hot dog. Cause that would be, if that's what's going to happen, they need to tell us ahead of time so that we can all show up, because I would like to see that.
It's going to be the Oakland Chamber of Commerce men's choir
doing a choral rendition of Cameos / Dem Franchise Boys talking out the side of my neck.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. You know, I would stick around and listen rather than go get the hot dog.
Already. I hope they've taken the earmuffs off that you asked them to put on earlier so that they know about these brilliant ideas that need to be implemented. All right. All right, Oakland at Sacramento Republic, 5 p.m. at the Oakland Atomia Coliseum. Big game for Prinks Tires USL Cup contention. Back to talk about it afterwards. And, of course, until then, up the roots.